Welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and right now our guest is Ruth Magnuson Davis. We've spoken with her before. She is a translator, among other things, and she has put together actually the old William Tyndale Bible, which she kind of brought a little bit of modern Anglicization to it. But now she's working on a new book that's just about to come out called The Story of the Matthew Bible. Ruth, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me on again, Jerry.
Sure. So what is the Matthew Bible?
Well, some of the highlights of its story are, first of all, it's what I call a pure Reformation Bible. It's from the early Reformation period. It was published in 1537. And Reformation Bibles can be distinguished from others that came later by certain features, such as the translation techniques, and the translation of the Greek word ecclesia by congregation rather than church. Another highlight is it formed the basis of all the Bibles that came later. Few people realize that it was the basis of the KJV. It was the world's first English study Bible. It had over 2,000 commentaries. It had a concordance. It had a lengthy statement of biblical doctrines and calendars and other helps. And last but not least, it's the only English Bible that was bought with blood. Two of the translators died for giving us this Bible. One of them was William Tyndale, which is a name that most Christians will recognize. He was strangled and burned at the stake in 1536. So I talk about these features of the Reformation Bibles in the story of the Matthew Bible. And I should note for the audience that this is the first book ever written that I know of that's dedicated solely to the story of the Matthew Bible. It's an untold story, but there really is a lot to learn and to know about this great Bible.
Just so you know, there is a book called Trial by Fire, which deals with the story of the English-speaking Bible, and there'll probably be maybe a couple pages or something dedicated to the Matthew Bible, but as you say, not a whole book. So that's fascinating.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's the story of William Tyndale. Yeah.
Right. Well, it's and beyond too. But this is interesting to me. Tyndale was martyred in 1536, and he prayed, "God, open the King of England's eyes." And then this book comes out just a year later with Henry VIII's blessing. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Well, that prayer was answered pretty quick.
It was, and you know, my reading of history has revealed that King Henry really did want the people to have an English Bible, and he resisted a lot of contrary pressure from the conservatives and the Roman Catholics that were around him in order to give the people the Bible.
Huh. Okay, William Tyndale, just real fast, was the first pioneer when it comes to, you know, translating the Bible from the original languages, the very first pioneer. In the English translation would be Wycliffe. But and Tyndale was martyred for his efforts. Who was Miles Coverdale?
Okay, well, there were altogether three men who gave us the Matthew Bible. One was Tyndale. The other was Miles Coverdale. He was also very important in English Bible history. He was not fully competent in the biblical languages. Excuse me. So he translated from German language Bibles, mainly Martin Luther. And you can really pick up Martin Luther's straight-talking style in Coverdale's part of the Bible. It's really a delight to read. And then a third man named John Rogers came along, and he gathered their work together, and he added the commentaries that I spoke about, and he published the whole thing in 1537 under the name he used a pseudonym, Thomas Matthew, and so that's why it ended up being called the Matthew Bible.
So there was no Thomas Matthew per se. If there were such a person, it would just be John Rogers using a fake name.
Right, and when John Rogers was martyred, he was Bloody Queen Mary's first burning victim. Oh. One of the accusations made against him was that he had used the alias Thomas Matthew.
Oh, wow. Isn't that interesting? And by the way, one little tidbit. Tyndale, in his translation of Matthew 6, the Lord's Prayer, he says, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." In Miles Coverdale, He said, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And every time I, you know, hear that in Sunday morning in the prayer services and in church and so forth, I always remember that little distinction. It's just, it's very mm-hmm. interesting.
It's an interesting one.
Yeah. So, as far as, these, did King Henry VIII, who was responsible ultimately for Tyndale being killed, did he know that Tyndale had any kind of contribution to this Bible that came out in 1537, the Matthew Bible?
Well, you know, that's not clear. And also, who is responsible for Tyndale's execution? There's different theories about that. Some think it was Sir Thomas More, who was certainly one of Tyndale's most vocal enemies. And some think it was Bishop Stokesley. So it's unclear. At the time that Tyndale was apprehended, Lord Cromwell, Thomas Cromwell, was very close to King Henry and actually did attempt to make efforts to get Tyndale released from prison.
That's a century before, by the way, Oliver Cromwell, the more famous Cromwell, but this is somebody else.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, he was a Puritan, yeah.
Right, so basically, did Henry VIII know that much of this Bible, the Matthew Bible, came from William Tyndale, who was kind of an enemy of the state? That's the basic
right.
question.
The answer to that is not clear.
Okay.
I suspect that he did know, although Cromwell and Cranmer and the others may have kept it from him. But Queen Anne Boleyn knew, and so he had declared Tyndale's translations to be perverse, and he had banned them. So it may very well be that knowledge was kept from him.
Yeah, huh? Interesting.
If he knew, he kept his knowledge secret.
By the way, some of the film or television portrayals of Anne Boleyn, I think, are completely off the mark, because she did support the Reformation and was a godly woman, correct?
I don't know. I know that Thomas Cranmer believed that she was a godly woman. I've read some of the histories and the biographies. It seems to me that she is misrepresented. But I haven't formed a clear opinion on that.
Okay. All right. What tell us about Tyndale's remark about the plowboy. I think it's a beautiful thought.
Well, when he was still in England, before he moved over to the continent to translate the Bible, he found himself getting into disputes with Roman Catholic clergy who lived in the area. And in one dispute, the clergyman made a comment to the effect that he would rather have the Pope's law than the law of the Bible, something to that effect. And in response, Tyndale made the very famous comment that if God spared his life, before long he would make sure that there was a Bible that even the plowboy could read, and that the plowboy would understand the scriptures better than the clergyman did. And that actually formed the basis of his whole translation philosophy, was that the scriptures should be as plain and clear as possible.
Yeah.
And that was an approach that he shared with Martin Luther. Both William Tyndale, and I'm going to talk about this in the story of the Matthew Bible,
mm-hmm.
both Martin Luther and William Tyndale wrote against what's called the literal translation approach to the Bible. And that's one of the things that marks the Reformation Bibles. When the Geneva Bible came along, the scholars that worked on that chose to follow what they call a literal translation philosophy, and it did make the Bible more difficult to read.
Mm.
And so that's one of the things that sets the Reformation Bibles apart from what I call the pre-modern Bibles,
as
the Geneva Bible and the KJV.
Sure. And can you give us some examples, like, for example, Galatians 5:12 and Revelation 10:6?
Right. Actually, Galatians 5:12 is an interesting, shows the progression from the Reformation approach to the literal approach and to what happened with the modern Bibles. So in Galatians 5:12, Tyndale, in the Matthew Bible, this is when Paul was lamenting the Judaizers who had come into the Galatians church. He said, quote, I would to God they were separated from you, which trouble you. in the modern English, I would to God they were separated from you, those who trouble you. So in the Geneva Bible, to look at the 1599 version, they used the concrete idiom rather than giving it the full figurative meaning, and they said, would to God they were even cut off, which do disquiet you. So cut off means separate from, but it's a concrete way of expressing it. Mm-hmm. So that's called a literal approach. The KJV followed that and said, I would they were even cut off, which trouble you. So now we get to the Revised Standard Version in 1946, and we see that literal translation twisted. So here we get in the RSV, I wish those who unsettle you would mutilate themselves.
Oof.
And that gets carried on. The Jerusalem Bible, I would like to see the knife slip. Oof. The NIV has, I wish they would go the whole way and emasculate themselves. So, you know, that's a kind of a simple and a dramatic illustration of the move from idiomatic, straightforward translations in the Matthew Bible to the literal, and then it kind of gets mixed up in the modern Bibles.
Boy, you make me want to go back to my Greek New Testament and look that up myself. Okay, talk about the New Matthew Bible Project.
Mm-hmm. Well, I founded the New Matthew Bible Project in 2009, and it's dedicated to just gently updating the Matthew Bible. It's just a gentle update, keeping the historic language of the faith, but just modernizing the grammar and the syntax and some of the obsolete words so that I can draw out all the meaning and help it flow so that readers aren't stumbling over the old English.
Sure. By the way, as somebody is reading, let's say even if they were reading it in 1537, if somebody was reading the Matthew Bible, how would they know which part came from William Tyndale and which part came from Miles Coverdale?
You know,
they wouldn't.
I've read the whole Matthew Bible, and it's not indicated anywhere.
Right.
There are certain hints. There are initials, very elaborate initials placed here and there.
Oh, in the margins.
In the Bible.
Yeah.
Well, like at the end of Malachi, there's a WT.
Oh, William Tyndale.
But that's... yeah, but that's actually not fitting because it was Coverdale who gave us the prophetical books. But the authorship of the Matthew Bible is nowhere clearly given.
Okay, so we just don't know. The fact of the matter is we just don't know. All right.
Oh, well, we know who gave us what because there are Bible scholars who have...
oh, okay, kind of looked at the styles and so forth.
Yes. Yeah.
Most of the New Testament comes from Tyndale, is that correct?
All of the New Testament is William Tyndale's, and that's easily verified.
Okay.
The first half of the Old Testament is from him, and the rest is from Miles Coverdale.
Excellent. All right. And what if somebody's thinking, you know, I don't need to know all this historical stuff. Give us an appreciation of the sacrifice of Tyndale and the sacrifice of Coverdale and the sacrifice of John Rogers so that we could read the Bible for ourselves. I mean, it's like we take this for granted. And there was a time when it was against the law and you could even be killed in English if you translated the Bible in the English, or in some cases, I guess, even if you had a copy of the Bible, you could be punished for it.
That's right. And, you know, that's another thing that that distinguishes the Reformation Bibles from the pre-modern Bibles or the church Bibles. When Tyndale and Coverdale wrote, there were laws in England that prohibited anyone who was unauthorized from translating the Bible into English. And anyone who did so could be burned alive, and anybody who read their works could be burned alive.
Mm.
And the Roman Catholic authorities were ferociously opposed to having the Bible in English. They wanted it left in Latin. So these men, the way I express it is they worked outside the camp.
Mm-hmm.
They and their readers were reviled. They suffered persecution. William Tyndale in, I think it was a foreword to... one of the editions of his New Testament said that he was working in, quote, necessity, encumbrance above strength, in constant need and poverty and difficulty.
They paid a high price so that we could read this for ourselves.
They sure did.
We're basically,
and the later Bibles, the translators didn't deal with those difficulties at all.
Yeah, and we're out of time at this point. But thank you so much for being with us. Let me give you the website here. It's RuthMagnusonDavis.com, and I'll spell Magnuson, M-A-G-N-U-S-S-O-N. And again, we're talking about a new book called What is the Matthew Bible? And also there on our website, you can get information about October Testament, which is the original Tyndale Bible with a slight updating of some of the spelling. Thank you so much, Ruth, for being with us. God bless you. Appreciate it.
Thank you again, Jerry. Bye.
Okay. Bye-bye now.